Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Is there anything sadder than a person who goes to a bar every day?
Yes. Someone who listens to a C-grade podcast every day.
All right, day three of the replacements countdown, and this is appropriate.
Nice crack.
They enjoyed a drink or two.
A few.
Yeah.
I did get to interview Paul Westerberg in 1987 when I was working at a TV station, and he was drinking one of those oil cans of Foster's the entire interview.
Great.
So I interviewed him on that same tour for the college newspaper at Indiana. They let me come backstage and interview him before the show.
So cool.
The Please Meet Me tour, and he was drinking a fifth of Jack Daniels.
Ooh. He was really getting into it that day.
And both you guys know where those tapes are, right?
They're in the river.
Okay, that's right.
They're at the bottom of the river.
Bottom of the Mississippi River.
That's right. Okay, this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
Phil Ingrassia.
And we're so happy that Phil is joining us for Replacements Countdown Week because Phil is a Minnesotan.
He's added so much already to these. You know, I know we've only done two episodes, but Phil, your insights have been really great. Thank you so much for being here.
Can I ask you this, Phil? You know, yesterday Patrick asked you about replacements and prints and all that, but where do you stand on the, you know, having lived there at the time, where do you stand on the replacements versus Husker Du debate?
Replacements.
Yeah.
I love Husker Du, though. I, you know, Candy Apple Gray, Warehouse Songs and Stories. Wow, those are great records if people haven't ever checked those out. And Bob Mould is amazing. He continues to make really good records.
I totally agree. He and Westerberg are so different. Completely different personalities,
very, very different. Yeah.
Bob Mould was just driven from the beginning to succeed and was a hard worker and had a clear head about all of this and sort of had a, you know, had a plan and understood the business and all this kind of stuff that the Replacements could never be bothered with.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to get back into this countdown here. We are now into the top 10. We asked a core group of podcast listeners to submit their top 10s of replacement songs. We got the best response for this of any band we've done so far.
Best that's ever.
It's only the third one, but that's still.
Right. Still very good. Encouraging.
It's growing.
Yep.
How many people? 32.
32 voters, which is fantastic. So thank you all. I mean, everybody, you know, from Phil. Nice to hear from our friend Tug Baker, because he once played in a Replacements cover band called Placemats, which was great. Will Pfeiffer, BJ Bonn, and Nick, we've mentioned, and many of the comments you're going to hear that Jim has been reading. And I also want to thank the Bish, Brad Mailer, Andy, all participated, which was great. And my old friend Dave McChesney, who turned me on to the Replacements, was kind enough from Albuquerque to give his top 10 as well. So we appreciate that.
A couple quick things. Will get mad at me if I don't correct the pronunciation of his last name because it's untraditional. It's Pfeiffer.
Sorry, Will. Pfeiffer.
It's weird that way. Yep. But now I'm going to set up this song with a listener comment from Ben Montgomery. He just says, the attitude of this song is all over my list. Color Me Impressed, coming in at number 9.
Man, it's a perfect song. I definitely voted for this one. So many great lines in this song, including, an overt reference to cocaine sniffing that's thrown in there. And in the first Replacements album, sorry, Ma, I forgot to take out the trash, Twin Tone or Peter Jesperson or someone included a little sticker or an outside on the shrink wrap that said file under power trash. I don't know if you guys remember this, but to me, this is the peak of the power trash aesthetic that they had. I mean, they were able to fuse the melodies of Paul, the great lyrics, and just the driving power. I mean, listen to that guitar just being scraped at the beginning, well, you know, the bass and the strings. It's so crazy and it's so awesome.
There's that, and there's some great, like, Bob Stinson guitar stuff in the middle of that song. It's just, like, insane. Like, it's like, you don't know if he's doing it, playing it that way on purpose or by accident. It doesn't really matter because it's just crazy.
But this is that hard rock, you know, feeling that Bob grew up with.
It's the kind of song you wonder if they ever played it the same twice. Yeah. How could they?
Right.
Exactly.
I just love that in that middle portion there is like, it just really feels like controlled chaos going on. And then it just like, you hear that drum beat and just boom, it just snaps it right back.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
It's really a fantastic song. Again, why I think people still love this band so much is because there's such a like an energy and a feeling in this that a lot of bands could never quite achieve.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of great rock bands out there, but there's something that just, there's some magic that certain ones have, and they're able to play in such a way that it just embodies rock and roll. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
I know exactly what you're saying. And there are times on Hootenanny, and certainly on, you know, Let It Be, where their power rivals anything in rock history, and this is a great example. I mean, they sound like the Stones, and they're that powerful when they're that cranked up.
And they have that Stones kind of snide attitude.
They do,
you know, color me impressed.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
I couldn't give a crap that you live in Edina or whatever, because you know that's kind of the kind of class warfare that went on in Minneapolis at that time. You had punks, you had new wavers. And there was certainly a scene of wealth there in Minneapolis that those guys were not a part of. They weren't wealthy at all. They weren't suburban rich kids who were going off to great colleges or even going to the University of Minnesota. They were definitely at a level that they had to work hard for what they got, and that was it.
Paul was working as a janitor when the band started.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Bob and Tommy came from a really bad home situation. These guys, I mean, they were the real deal when you think of a rock band, right?
Yeah, and you know, you're reading in Bob Mayer's book, again, Trouble Boys, and you know, you come to this part where it's like, oh God, this is going to be this really big dramatic decision where the band's getting pretty successful and they want to tour. But unfortunately, Tommy is only a sophomore in high school. And you're like, oh, this is going to be this big deal. And they're all like, nah, man, I'm dropping out.
Yeah.
It's like, my mom was like, I'm not in jail and I'm making a little money. So sure, go ahead. You know, your brother will watch you, even though it turned out to be Peter Jesperson. But yeah, that's, you know, it's exact. There was never thought of higher education or anything else.
When you think of the life that guy's lived, be in a band at 12.
Oh,
I mean, my son is 12 and somebody wants to go take him on a tour bus with a bunch of other no,
it's crazy.
You're not even going to a band practice, son, until right. you're 16.
But of course, again, if, like I mentioned, the bad home situation, all of that, if you read that book, the being in the band is what saved him.
Absolutely.
You know,
he would have been in jail for stealing, or he was getting into larceny and things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, his older brother, Bob, knew, like, this would be the best thing for him.
That's why made him do it. Yeah. Literally sat him down and made him learn the bass.
Now, I want to talk about lyrics here, a couple things. So, we got some listener comments on this song. The first is a lyric I know you like, Patrick. I know you've talked about this before. This is Nick just saying, can you stand me on my feet?
Yeah,
so, talk about that for a bit. It has sort of a double meaning,
it's
right?
It's beautiful, yeah. I mean, I'm already so wasted, you know, intoxicated that I need to be actually helped up. But, you know, can you stand me that way if I'm actually a functioning human being? Or do I have to be like Blotto to actually get through to you and relate to you? So, it's just a brilliant line right there. It really is.
Right. And then, you know, Mike Wagner gets at the heart of this song. Everybody at your party, they don't look depressed.
Right.
Everybody's dressing funny. Color me impressed.
Wow.
Right.
Color me impressed.
Yeah. So unlike the parties he normally goes
to. That's right. Yeah, exactly. Where people are there because they're depressed.
There's this weird documentary called Color Me Obsessed that came out a few years ago. And I say it's weird because they never got permission to use any of the music or any right. any concert video, but it is definitely a documentary of the Obsessed, who, if you want to watch or watch people talk in depth about those times in Minneapolis and the music, that's something to check out.
Yes, I've seen that as well. It's definitely it's a good watch if you're an obsessive fan.
If you're like listening to this, yeah. you'd probably yeah, like it.
That's right. If you're going to listen this whole week, you better watch
it. But for anyone who's like a casual fan of this band, that documentary won't make any sense at all. It gives you no like context for any right. stuff.
No, and it's just, it's hard to watch an right. hour plus of with just, no music.
Right, you know? Just people talking.
Yeah.
All right, we better play some more music, I guess. Huh?
Yeah.
Boy, who'd want to listen to that?
That's right. I do want to mention also, Mike Wagner said, how many times do we go to some party we got dragged to, or at some gathering we don't want to be at, or dealing with some wanker who's grating your last nerve, and we then sing this song to ourselves?
That's right. Yeah. It's a great point, Mike. There are so many replacements lines, you know, that you keep around in your head for those certain kind of times. From Run It to Goddamn Job, there are a lot that you just carry with you and then pull out that's at right. certain times.
And yeah. Phil mentioned the sort of antisocial nature
yes.
of the guys in this band. So it really is perfect. And I think the antisocial nature is what, you know, maybe a lot of the fans of this band possess as well, so you can relate to that.
Totally,
right?
Man. I mean, it made it be okay to be antisocial and just hang out with those four friends that you had who were really into music. To me, I carried it around and made me feel a lot better about myself.
Keith Jacobson says, I think this is an early sign of even better things to come. Mm. So you get the sense, I do think, you know, on Hootenanny, which is this kind of ramshackle record that there's like, wow, this is really like, you know, bright kind of like pop rock yeah. song in the middle of that, right? But I want to get your opinion on this, too, because I asked yesterday, I think, like, what is the why does this band endure? Why is there yeah. so much love? Why is it for people who are into this band are like really into this band?
Yes.
Right. And I think there's also something about the fact that they never succeeded.
Yes.
Right. Like
right.
if they had had and Bob Mayer, when we talked to him, talked about this.
Yes,
if they
he
had
did.
Broken through even with like one top 10 hit or something. Would it have taken something away,
I think,
don't you think, over
yeah,
time?
I think it really would have. Yeah, that they were kind of the ultimate strugglers.
Kind of ne'er-do-wells, right?
Well, look at another yeah. band from Minneapolis, Soul Asylum, which, you know, they worked hard for years.
They did.
And if you've never heard the album And the Horse They Rode In On, it's just an awesome record.
Yeah.
And then they blew up in the mid-90s. But man, did they fall hard and
right.
fast.
Yep.
And
that's a perfect example.
You know, they just kind of disintegrated and... You know, they're still out there working hard and touring around, but, you know, no, they don't have the love that this band has. And Soul Asylum probably outsold these guys
oh, yeah.
how many times?
Right.
10 times?
Runaway Train itself probably did. But you're right. What endures past and the horse they rode in on? Not much, you know, when they sort of made that turn.
Yeah.
So,
as I mentioned, we should stop talking so much and play some more music.
At all. The summer's past, it's too late to cut the grass. There ain't much to make anyway in the fall. And sometimes I just ain't in the mood to change my place and back for loud mouths. Like a picture on the fridge, it's never stocked with food. Used to live at home, now I stay at the house. And everybody wants to be special here. They call your name out loud and clear. Here come
Here Comes a Regular. That is, what, number 8? Is that where we are?
Number
yes.
8.
There's a lot of love for this song. I
yeah,
know
there
that
is.
To
yeah.
be the case. People mm-hmm. often cite this as their favorite replacement song. For a band that was so well known for like heavy drinking, this does not glorify that lifestyle.
Not in any way. No. Mm-mm. And, you know, the Replacements grew up listening to classic hard rock. Like, even stuff that, like, myself, who, like, as a classic hard rock fan, didn't really listen to. Stuff like Blackfoot and UFO and bands like that. And they had the sense here with this, you know, big kind of solo song, even though they'd kind of done those before, to put that last on Tim. And that was always the kind of like, oh gosh, here we are, we're at the end of the album, I'm sad that this great album is over. But it does make you think. And the part to me that always, you know, sort of resonated and meant a lot was like, it's too late to cut the grass, like the summer's over, if there ain't much to rake now, you know. Suddenly you're faced with this bleak, right. like right. long time right. before any hope is going to come into your life.
Right. Or at least that like occupied this guy's time.
Yeah.
Right? Gave
exactly.
him something to do.
Right. Other than showing up at the bar at 3 o'clock right. or something every right. day. Yeah.
Well, and this song makes me think to Minneapolis, which like most towns has a lot of cool dive bars.
Yeah.
And you just feel like, gosh, I'm in this dark bar by myself watching TV and the bartender's the only guy in there. And, you know, there's just tons of bars like that in Minnesota that I can remember. And so it has a real place for me beyond the sentiment of, here I am again.
Yeah.
You know,
and it does have an audio quality just of the way it's got that weird kind of synthesizer line and the real echoey feel to the acoustic guitar that's not real biting. It's kind of, it all goes squishy around the edges like 2 a.m., you know, like closing time or last call in a bar where you're just feeling like, I'm so disoriented. You know, it's really captures that really well.
My only complaint about this song, and I'm probably in the minority here, whatever, I don't really like that guitar tone, and it's so
unusual.
It's so high in the mix that I find it distracting sometimes. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, it's a great song.
Going back to your point about the production on this record, that's a great case in point.
Yeah. A person can work up a mean, mean thirst after a hard day of nothing much at all.
What else?
Right?
It's just great.
It's really perfect. And there's
that makes it okay to go to the bar if you've just been sitting around all day when you listen to this song.
I find this to be a killer line. I used to live at home. Now I stay at the house.
That's huge. Yeah.
I mean, you just let that sink in for a minute, right?
A fridge that's never stocked with food. Right.
Oh, it's so good. But and then also, too, I think, you know, this came out in 85. Five?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
October of 85.
So I think when he's also, in a way, he's relating this to pop culture, I think.
Yeah.
And something that people know where he says, here comes a regular, call out your name. That leads me to think of Norm from Cheers.
There you go.
Right?
Right, when he walks in.
Right.
Yeah.
And but that's always like sort of a happy thing. Everybody's happy to
Norm.
See Norm.
Yeah.
Everybody, you know, and but when you sort of peel back the layers, it's like Norm's really got kind of a sad life when you think about it, right?
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And in real life, that wouldn't be so great.
No, I'd rather go to the bar instead of going home. Right. You know, right. So definitely. Yeah.
I think we have some listener comments on this one.
Oh,
I think we have actually quite a
few.
We do. So let me look that up. Oh, just a couple here.
Okay.
Oh, again, Nick references, I used to live at home. Now I stay at the house.
Yeah.
Ben Montgomery says, the lyrics kill me. And then, Harris King says, I'm sick of everything my money can buy.
That's
such a
nice.
Great line.
Yeah. Very, very good. Yeah. This is another really, really fun one to play on the guitar and to kind of inhabit the song a little bit. It's not a super complicated one for you guitar players out there. So it's fun to sing along with.
So as we move on in our countdown, I'm going to bet this one might be a little bit harder to play on the guitar.
Yeah, probably is going to be.
Yeah.
That's Unsatisfied from Let It Be.
That's right. We finally arrived at Let It Be, which is cool. This is our first song from that. Really? So far, yeah.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
I know that because of the color coding.
I think if when I'm putting together a list like this for myself, you know, I don't rank them. I just try to get it down to 10.
Yep.
But if I were to rank them, this might be number one.
Really? That's very, very interesting.
This is an insanely powerful song.
It really
is. I can't think of too many songs really that I know in rock music history that are such a like just open up your heart and let it fall on the floor kind of song as Unsatisfied, right?
Or open up a vein.
Yeah, exactly. And here the singing of Westerberg reaches a different level to me than anything, you know, so much more mature yet still raw than anything on Hootenanny. It just is, it's at an incredible peak here. Personally, my favorite Replacements album, Let It Be. And, you know, it's interesting reading in Bob Mayer's book, basically saying Paul didn't have a lot of these words formed when they went to cut the song. Like, he was improvising some of them, but like you guys said, really coming right from the vein. Yeah, right from the jugular, man.
I mean, it just starts out right away. You know, look me in the eye and tell me that I'm satisfied. I mean, it's so just like unbelievably raw song, right?
Also featuring a 12-string acoustic guitar and a sort of a pedal steel kind of effect on this one. Different tones than they'd really worked in
but
before.
But it's perfect, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, really, really
the
is.
The music, I think, also expresses the emotion of the song.
Absolutely.
That kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it. Again, the music almost sounds like it's kind of just pouring out of the speaker, right? Instead of shooting out like so many of the other songs,
yes,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, it does. It kind of oozes from a dark, painful place. Yeah.
Mark Neese, one of our listeners, says this is a powerful anthem.
Yeah.
That's how he calls it. And then Justin Steiner says, I used to sing this one at the top of my lungs in the early 90s to the point where my fiance, now wife of 26 years, wondered aloud if I wasn't happy with her.
It's a good thing you didn't say fiance, who ended our engagement after I sang this song once too many.
It worked out for Justin.
That's great.
But I could see how that might be misinterpreted.
Sure.
All right. Well, are you guys satisfied so far with this countdown?
I am satisfied. I really am. I'm having a great time.
All right. We are now going to move into top six.
The upper echelons of our survey.
Favorite replacement songs as voted on by listeners of Rock in the Suburbs. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to those tomorrow.
Cool.
You mentioned that this was the first song from Let It Be, meaning there might be more.
Yeah.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. All right. I wonder what that might be.
There will be at least one more.
I feel like this particular episode was kind of cathartic. We got a lot out on this one, man.
I'm feeling better,
Those are some pretty emotional songs.
Yeah, they really are. Through.
All right. So you're going to want to tune in tomorrow because you're listening.
Every day.
Every day.
Yeah.
Doing the replacements all this week. If you still want to hit us up with more comments on some of your favorite replacement songs or whatnot, you can call and leave a message,
612-440-1984.
Or you can email us, rock@suburbspod.com, or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. You can leave comments there. Also, you know, if you like the show, please support it on Patreon, where you can get some bonus content, like we're doing videos of this.
That's right.
You can see us.
There's Phil.
Talking and drinking beer.
Yep.
And sometimes you get some extra stuff because I forget to turn off the video recorder. So you get some stuff that we don't realize. You know.
Three old men standing up and going to the bathroom. Well, where'd they all go? They're in the bathroom.
No. Sometimes you get some extra conversation that we didn't even count on, right?
That's
so you
never know. That's kind of cool.
So that could be worth a few bucks. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/suburbspod.
Please.
And you'll see all the info there. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us is Phil Ingrassi. Thanks, Phil. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
And I'm satisfied.